Today's reading begins in Revelation chapter 13, verse 1. Revelation chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard, its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them, and authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation, and all who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had 2 horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people, and by the signs that it allowed to work in the presence of the beast. It deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. Also it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So chapter 12, we had seen Satan being described as the dragon, pursuing those that followed Christ. In chapter 13 now, we have these two beasts that are mentioned. And so having failed in his effort, speaking of Satan, to destroy the man-child and the woman, the dragon was cast down where he rallies against those that are God's people. He's trying to destroy God's purpose and God's rule. He's coming against the church itself. And so these two beasts are really being described as helpers of Satan at this point. He uses this image that is the beast rising up out of the sea. And for the Hebrews, the sea was a fearful place. They weren't typically those that would go out on the sea. They may do some fishing like we see with some of Jesus' disciples, but they don't really go out into the sea. They're not the people that would go a long ways from land or travel some long distance. They primarily stayed on land and they worked agriculture and did these types of things. And so they saw the sea as a frightening place that held a lot of unknowns. And there's, you know, you do a little bit of a history and you realize that there were a lot of mysteries and a lot of stories about the sea, and that may have fed this as well. But the idea of this beast coming up out of the sea is coming up out of that mysterious and frightful place. It may also be some reference to, you know, the turbulence of the nations of the world at this point in talking about the sea. And that wouldn't be new. Jeremiah chapter 51, talking about all the different peoples that Babylon was ruling over. It called them many waters. Jeremiah 51 as well. And later in the chapter, verse 42, the sea has come up over Babylon. She is covered with the multitude of the waves thereof. So this imagery has been used before as well. Likewise, we see the great sea being mentioned in Daniel chapter 7 with the four beasts there. So if we take the sea as being frightful, mysterious, and also being the turbulence of the world around them, Then we can see that this wild beast of the vision arises of the turmoils, the wars, and the violence of society. The 10 horns symbolizing fullness of power, 7 heads indicating intelligence. On his horns, 10 diadems indicating the rule and the realm which he represents. And the dragon was also described as having 7 heads and 10 horns, but the diadems on his head and here upon the beast's horns. So make no mistake that the way he's describing this beast tells us that the beast is of the devil. He compares them so that we understand the beast possesses characteristic and qualities that would be attributed to the devil. The whole idea of the blasphemy and the blasphemous names on his heads is talking about a completely irreverent attitude toward God and toward everything that would be sacred and holy. Now, some attribute this beast to being the fourth beast mentioned in Daniel chapter 7. And we understand that in the book of Daniel, talking about those four great beasts, that they were four kings that shall arise out of the earth. That's Daniel 7 and verse 17. So if that be so, then this beast mentioned here would be the fourth of Daniel's vision and would therefore then be the Roman Empire. And if that be the case, then what we're seeing described is Satan's diabolical and blasphemous power and his cruelty and his opposition to God's kingdom and using the Roman Empire to carry that out. So if that is also the case, then the fourth beast is combining the power of the first three. So you had the power of Chaldea, which was the lion. You had the force of the Medo-Persian Empire, which was the bear. You had the swift and ferocious character of Macedonia under Alexander, which was the leopard. And all of this makes sense since we realize that the events that are contained in the book of Revelation are described as things that must soon take place, and they were living under the Roman Empire. And so even though Satan is described as being cast down, he still has this power and still continues to go against those that would be part of God's kingdom. Carrying this thought forward, we see in verse 4, they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like it, who can fight against it? And remember that some of the Roman emperors even got to the point that they wanted people to worship them, which wasn't new. I mean, that goes back all the way to the time of Daniel as well. But it does explain the whole idea of this haughtiness, the blasphemous words, uttering blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Verse 7, allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. Though I do want to point out to you that that part of that phrase where he says, and to conquer them, is not included in some manuscripts. So there's some ambiguity about whether that should have been included in the translation. Now, the first beast had come up out of the sea. The second beast in verse 11 rises up out of the earth. These two are related. I think that we can take both being described as beasts as being that they're of the same type. But this one looks very different. It says two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. I think the indication is that its intentions and its words are very different from the way that it appears. Later on, when we get to chapter 16, and chapter 19 and chapter 20, talk about this beast in a representation as the false prophet, so indicating this is probably false religion, which is one of the devil's means of deceiving and seducing people and convincing them of his own lies. Matthew 7 and verse 15, Jesus warned of this, saying, beware of false prophets that come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. Paul warned in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 15 of Satan's ministers that fashioned themselves or presented themselves as ministers of righteousness or angels of light. Now this second beast is inferior to the first, at least in terms of authority, because it's acting under the authority of the first beast, as we see in verse 12. As to verse 13, when it says that he performs great signs, I think he's talking about lies, deceits. He's talking about false signs, no true power behind it. You go back to chapter 11 and talk about the true witnesses and their power there. So the false prophet would imitate that with sort of pseudo miracles and signs, using that to deceive the world. Matthew chapter 24 and verse 24, Jesus said, "There will arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders to lead people astray, and if possible, even the elect." Paul echoed the same sentiments in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 9 when he said, that the man of sin whose coming is according to the work of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders, with all deceit of unrighteousness for them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. Then in 2 Timothy 3 and verse 13, he wrote, "Evil men and imposters will get worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived." I think that's supported by verse 14 when it says, "By the signs that is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth." I think these images are likely pointing back toward the idea of worshiping the Caesar of Rome and paying homage to them and this false religion that would come up out of that. And there were Christians that lost their lives because they were unwilling to pay homage and to worship the Caesar of Rome. In previous readings so far, we've seen God talk about sealing his people and impressing his name and the name of the Lamb upon their foreheads, chapter 7, chapter 9, and also coming up in chapter 14. And so that was a promise of God for those that were his. And so likewise, the beast is imitating this, requiring this mark now mentioned to be a mark toward him or allegiance toward him. Now, I don't think that he's talking about a literal mark. I think we're still talking about figurative language and talking about that devotion to the false religion, perhaps specifically devotion to the emperor. It may also be that this mark just means that you could look at their character and the way that they live their life and be able to see where their allegiance really lies. Verse 17 talks about this persecution reaching the point that if it was evident that you were a Christian, you were one of God's people, that you would have difficulty even engaging in trade. So that might be another way of persecution in terms of pressure to hide your Christianity or even forsake the name altogether. Now regarding this number 666 or 666, I would caution you not to fall into the trap of many of the modern explanations about 666, but just to realize that when we're talking about apocalyptic language, that a lot of times numbers were used to represent an idea or something that would be expressed for them to understand because they were of the right type of thinking. I think that they would have understood it when they read it in the first century. And I don't think we should take it as, okay, we're trying to find a literal number or a literal quantity, but we need to go back to what idea is expressed. So we understand that the number 7 expresses the idea of perfection or completeness. We've had 7 churches, 7 horns, 7 eyes, 7 spirits. And so 6, which falls below that sacred number or that number of completeness, can never reach perfection or completeness. And so it symbolizes the imperfect, that which is destined to fail. Some even say that to the Jews, the number 6 was an omen or a symbol of dread and doom. So then when you put it together, 666, doing that triplet number, then you're just taking that idea and then you are magnifying it. So if it's a symbol of dread and doom, then it's being used 3 times. Was the completeness then of doom and failure or imperfection, that which is not holy? I know this is a difficult chapter, and I'm not trying to explain every little piece of it, but I hope I've given you enough of this overall picture to be able to understand a little bit of it, and then make some application for ourselves. And I think the takeaway for us really is, am I following what is true, and am I truly one of God's people? Do I have the seal or the mark? In other words, if I'm truly following God, then it will be seen, it will be evident. And am I willing to keep following God no matter what anybody else says and no matter what persecution might come upon us? So I hope that helps you, and I hope that you'll come back for another reading. Please continue in prayer that God may be with us all.